Forgotten Flicks, Episode 2. Go de-res yourself. Hey, everybody. Joel Robertson of the Forgotten Flicks podcast here. We're back with episode 2, and the focus of this episode is going to be Tron from 1982 versus Tron Legacy, the new film that just came out from Disney. With me right now is my co-host, who will be my regular co-host. It's Jason Grooms.
Hello.
Yeah, Jason, Jason and I went and saw Tron Legacy this last Friday evening. Today is actually December 19th, right? I think I'm right.
So
it was December 17th. We went and saw the film. So in case anybody's listening to this sometime in the distant future, to give you some kind of timeline. And we made a point that we would go in to see the film together, but we did not talk about it. The only thing we talked about afterwards was we made a comment about the music, and we made a comment about a couple trailers that we saw at the beginning of the movie. I'm actually going to kick it over to Jason. We're going to start with Tron Legacy and see what he thought of the film.
I kept dreaming of a world I thought I'd never see. And then, one day, something happened. Something extraordinary. I got in.
So, Jason, take it. And I do want to add one more thing. The main reason why I'm doing this, starting with you, is because normally I'm way really narcissistic and want to have it all be about me. But under the circumstances.
But today, you're going to give it up a little bit.
A little bit. Well, you know, I give it up all the time. But today, specifically,
right.
I'm going to give it over to you because we had had a discussion about the fact that you were a big fan of the original movie when you were a kid. And I actually wasn't really as big a fan, which I'll go into later when I go into my rant. So go ahead and take it. What did you think of Tron?
So you already set it up as a rant.
No, I did. You don't know. It could be a positive rant.
Right. You don't have. There's no such thing as a positive rant.
Oh, well, there are.
There's a gush, I guess.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
First, I got to say, it was mentally very, very difficult coming out of the movie and not saying anything. I'm very used to, I guess, having my initial thoughts on the movie. Yeah, I love the original. The 1982 version for me was I loved it. I mean, I was a big fan of the style of the movie. I really enjoyed the video game. I was kind of an arcade junkie when I was a kid, so any kind of movies that showed people going into a real stand-up arcade from my youth was something I loved. Now, this was very similar to, and you know, we've had this conversation before, but like The Last Starfighter, where it was the dream of a child of mine. You know, playing video games would somehow make you a hero of the universe. So Tron being that same type of thing, I kind of attached to it. So going into the Tron Legacy, I didn't quite know what to think. I wondered if they would make more of a connection to kind of the video game aspect of it, especially with, you know, nowadays in our internet age, the popularity of gaming, online gaming and consoles, and if they would kind of tap into that more, if they'd stay true to what the original Tron was, which was more of just, I almost felt like the original was the setting was just being inside of computers in general. It wasn't really the main theme, and games played into it, and it was kind of the ideas that Jeff Bridges had, you know, as Kevin Flynn in the original. He designed a game, and that was kind of the motivator for this whole thing, was him getting back to the games. But it wasn't necessarily about video games in general. It was kind of just computers and technology and everything.
Yeah.
So I wondered if they would do that in the new one, and they didn't really, which was kind of nice. I mean, they stayed, I think, true to that same theme. It was more just about being almost generically inside computers. So they didn't.
Can I say something really quick just to interject?
Yeah.
I feel as if you might be beating around the bush.
All right.
What did you think of the movie?
The music was phenomenal. I loved it. Jeff Bridges, I thought, as himself, as Kevin Flynn, you know, the real Jeff Bridges, not the digitized Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, we'll go into that later.
Yes. He was, I think he was really good. I don't think he quite pulled off the Zen master that he was supposed to be in the movie. He kind of, I sensed they were trying to write him in as almost like an Obi-Wan character where he was this calm Zen person. Didn't quite get that from him, but his acting was superb. Yeah. And I think he showed up everybody else in the movie. The visual was fantastic. I remember thinking at the very end though, if you want to wrap up my thoughts on the new one, it felt like getting in line for a really good ride at a theme park.
Uh-huh.
It was an awesome ride, but it was too short. And there were parts of the queue or the line that you're waiting in that were kind of slow and boring. Uh-huh. And it's like, all right, come on, hurry up and get back to the ride.
Okay.
So
on a scale of 1 to 10,
I'd still give it a 7 because I would say the music was really good. The visual effects of some of the action scenes were really good. I loved some of the camera angles, like in this is not giving anything away and I won't spoil anything, but the flight scene towards the end, you know, mm-hmm. there's the mm-hmm. flight battle.
I think it's in the trailer, so you're not giving anything away.
Yeah. Okay. So the flight scene and, you know, some of the scenes, the camera's like riding on the bad guy's back.
Uh-huh.
So as they're flying around, the fact that you see like the back of the guy's helmet and as they're kind of shooting at each other, that to me was just, that was awesome. It felt really, really cool. And then the fact that it was 3D was pretty wicked. Now, negatives. That whole Jeff Bridges digitized, it just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
I hate to say that because it was a phenomenal effort.
Yeah.
And the fact that they were able to make some person who is now, I don't know, how old is Jeff Bridges?
Probably pushing, I would think he's probably pushing 60.
Yeah, well,
if
at least.
If he's not past it, yeah.
Right. And, you know, the fact that they recreated him in his 1982 self.
Uh-huh.
That to me, I mean, that's a mm-hmm. that's a phenomenon, and the fact that they're able to do it is incredible.
Yeah.
But his mouth looked wrong, and the way he spoke, it almost, you know, it was like watching a video game animation almost, and so just didn't feel right.
And actually, what it reminded me of specifically mm-hmm. was that Robert Zemeckis performance capture element that he has in so many, you know, like you got the Polar Express and the last Christmas Carol and you know, sort of the how Zemeckis, I guess, wants to make, Beowulf when he did that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that performance capture, which I think on some level works in those films, minus the fact that like in Polar Express, some of those kids are friggin' creepy with their dead doll eyes. But, but you know, the fact is that, I'll just go ahead and interject real quick and to quote one of my favorite podcasts, one of the podcasts that I think I can speak for myself, but I think I speak for Jason as well when I say that Remember When, hosted by Paris and Jay.
Oh God, yeah,
it's one of the big reasons why that and a couple of Lost podcasts, The Transmission and the Jay and Jack podcast. Probably those three, I know for me, were one of the big reasons why you kind of inspired me. Like, man, I would love to do this. These people sound like they're having a blast. And I love listening to them all the time. So with Paris and Jay, quick shout out, you know, go over to filmtangent.com and check them out. The Remember When podcast, it doesn't come out all that often, but when it does, it's great stuff. They're really smart, cool guys. So, but to kind of paraphrase them, Jason, are you sitting down?
I've been sitting. I'm waiting.
Okay, because I think
I've been waiting for this ever since we walked. Ever since we were sitting in the theater and I saw these scenes happen on the screen, my mind went racing. I thought, I know what Joel's going to think. Oh God, I know what he's going to think.
Yeah, see, you know, you think you know what I'm going to think, except that I'm about to say that it is one of the great. No, I'm just. I can't even fake it.
I know you.
And actually, I did not hate the movie. I think that I'm going to be positive. I'm going to do the poop sandwich. I'm going to start.
Yes, it's a butt sandwich.
A butt sandwich. Okay, well, yeah, it makes sense. I'm going to start with, you know, a little something positive, throw in the negative, and I don't know if I'll actually really try really hard to end with something positive, but it may not happen.
Can we clarify why it's butt sandwiches that you say, I really like this, but.
I thought it was a butt sandwich because of what came out in the middle. But, okay. So actually, for me, the things I loved were the nods to the original. I loved when he went back to his dad's arcade, you know, and the fact that, I mean, of course, realistically, I mean, that neighborhood had gone to hell in a handbasket, and I highly doubt all those vintage 80s arcade games would be perfectly intact and just sitting there, oh, you know, especially since I guess, you know, in this, you know, mild spoiler alert, I mean, they've obviously Flynn goes missing, but I was under the impression that it was earlier in the 80s than it was, because they show that title at the very beginning of the movie of 1989. So he obviously, you know, went missing in 89. So I'm thinking by 89, I'm not saying that there wouldn't still be some Pac-Man and Centipede and some of the other ones that were in there, but I just think that it would have been a little bit more contemporary for even the time when the kid showed up.
Then again,
up.
You know, he could have kept it around as like that was his starting place, you know. That was
I can give you that. I can give you that for sure. I can give you that,
because I mean, by that time he was CEO and, you know, owner of Encom. So.
Yeah. So this might have just been his office, like his just hangout place, and he wants to keep it retro.
Maybe he didn't even let people in anymore. Maybe it was just kind of a place he kept his own. You know.
I loved that, and again, mild spoiler, nothing plot related, but I love that they used Journey's Separate Ways, and that they had the rhythmic Sweet Dreams. They had this kind of cool retro feel to it. I actually liked that the movie, and this is actually, I guess, again, not spoilery in a plot sense, but as far as a surprise for me, when we first went in, I figured this was going to be 3D from soup to nuts, but
that was strange. The little kind of disclaimer at the beginning that said some of these scenes are filmed in 2D. Please keep your glasses on throughout the entire thing. That even seemed a little off-putting in the beginning. But.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because it's mainly just the beginning piece. Now, I had my glasses on at the end, so I really didn't notice one way or the other, which I don't know how well that speaks to the 3D, but I assume the ending was not as well because they were back in the real world. But what I liked was that element, was the fact that 2D was the quote-unquote real world. 3D is when we go into the world of Clue and Tron
I agree.
And Kevin
Flynn.
I like that. Yeah, I thought that was really cool. You know, I liked a lot of those aspects. I actually kind of liked the two leads. I know, mm-hmm. I think the girl, the actress's name is Olivia Wilde. And I think the young guy's name is Garrett Hedlund. And I've never seen either of them before. I'm sure they've been in other things. I wasn't paying attention enough. She's almost too beautiful. But I know I don't want to give, you know, for what the role she plays in the film, it fits. But I just, you know, she was like almost just too beautiful. He had there's something about him, this sort of, you know, that rebel, you know, cocky tongue, kind of young Jeff Bridges quality to him. And I actually think, and this is where I'm now going to segue into the poop part of my sandwich. I thought that the kid who played him, when they went from the little kid back in, you know, the late 80s to him as a young adult.
Right.
They had a better resemblance going on than there was with Clue. The 35-year-old digitized Jeff Bridges. I honestly found it distracting. And I found it the most distracting in that opening scene, which, again, not giving anything away because it's in the trailer, that opening scene when he's with his son in the quote-unquote real world. I think if they had left at the first, they kind of have him in shadow and you just kind of have that, you know, quarter angle over the shoulder.
It was almost like they just had to show his face just to show what they had done.
And it was very self-conscious. I felt it was like he turns to the camera and, you know, we're on the same team or whatever he says. And it's just, he was so self-conscious and drew so much attention to him real.
Having that playing along that same angle, that, you know, it wasn't bad. And again, I don't think they it was terrible looking. It just was slightly enough off. It was kind of like in that movie Ice Pirates when they said, if you're off by 1 degree, you don't get through. Right. It was that way. It was just slightly off. Now, the thing that I think in the very, you know, towards as they're playing through the movie, and this a little bit of a spoiler alert, is that the actual Tron character from the original is supposed to be in this, in the new movie, right? They never showed his face.
Yeah, they did. Yes. I'm not going to say anything specific, but there was a flashback sequence and he was shown briefly. And when they showed him, I have to find that. I'm sure we could find the footage somewhere. Because it was kind of hidden in shadow. It was a flashback. And so
no, but I mean like in the digitized world they made all that effort to show Jeff Bridges, so Clue,
You
know, was Jeff Bridges' you know, kind of mock from the beginning. Why didn't they do the same thing for Bruce Boxleitner? You know, why didn't they kind of put a face on the digitized character in inside the computers, you know. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird. I know the scene you're talking about, the flashback, I'm talking about the actual.
But when they showed him, he was obviously younger, and it was obviously not, you know, original Bruce Boxleitner, and it looked good. From what I could see, it was quick. But in a way, that was probably better because it was.
I agree.
I wish that they had done one of two things. Either had left Clue, maybe had over time because of his, you know, whatever was going on with him within this world, had caused his face to change, to morph, to become something else maybe. And maybe he wore a mask, you know, a la Vader, you know, did something.
That would have been good. They could have gotten away with kind of like a burnt face, or scarred.
Something that would have, you know, and even if it's more, you want to keep it more digital. Which I don't even know if I should go on my tirade about the debate over whether organic matter could be brought into, could be converted down into bits and then brought into this world. Now, obviously, if we're going to accept the premise, if we're going to go into a movie like Tron, we accept that. That can happen. But what I don't accept is when said organic matter that has been turned into bits, when a certain event happens and said organic matter that is now bits bleeds. When everybody else in this world gives off a shower of data sparks or whatever the hell it is. And honestly, it was cool. I liked that when, you know, it's in the trailer. Like when you see somebody get blown apart, it's a very cool, it's like crystal mixed with water, mixed with data. It's just like, and it just bursts. And it was a cool, really kind of, surprisingly dark, violent into them. Like you think, this is a Disney movie. It's going to be a little lighter. And then you go back and like, when we go into the original Tron, it's definitely not in the original Tron, the way people die or the programs die, it's certainly not as intense as I think it was in this film. I think my biggest problem overall was the Clue character. And the thing I was going to say earlier, it wasn't just that they did that they decided, okay, we're going to digitize Jeff Bridges, show him younger. Probably my bigger problem was that why didn't they just hint at him being younger at the beginning, like shadows, you know,
right.
Just kind of over the shoulder.
Don't show his face
exactly. And then show him as he was in that digital world. I can accept that he kind of has a digital look to him.
I did the same thing. I thought, okay, this is real world. You don't have to show that digital face, Jeff Bridges. I mean, it's almost like you would do with any movie that was absent of that computer piece.
Yeah.
And it was just, okay, let's show a flashback to the past.
Yeah.
There are plenty of movies that do that don't need that kind of digitized face. And I know it was a tiny little part. I mean, it really was just that little scene, but that same thing. And for me, it kind of set that up, that little weirdness of feeling. But, you know, overall, like I didn't hate the movie either. I think, you know, the very little I've seen, I tried not to look at any reviews or critique of it going in, and even since then, so I kind of spill my beans in here.
Yeah.
There was nothing about it that was horrific, but it didn't quite blow me away like I had hoped it did. Yeah. Now, that being said, neither really did the original.
Yeah.
I think looking back on it, and you know, you and I both just rewatched it recently, and we've had this conversation before that sometimes rewatching a movie that when you were a kid was just freaking awesome and the most bitchin' thing you'd ever seen, you rewatch it and think, what? Why? So, it was good. Now, the original again had a lot of cool little nostalgic elements in it. So, the computers having the kind of language and code they had on them, and the perspective of what people thought computers were going to be like in the future was really kitschy and cool. But one of the things I wanted to point that I liked that I wanted to talk about was I think the homage that the new Tron movie, The Legacy, played to the old one. It didn't make it like it was a corny movie. You know how sometimes remakes or latter sequels will kind of make fun of the earlier movie.
Yeah,
I thought these were always very classy. Yeah. I didn't think there was anything that was over the top or dorky. I think it was really, they did pretty decent with it. So
yeah, and I think that to the point you're making, and a tie, and I'll wrap it up about Tron Legacy. I think I agree with you about Tron Legacy that the visuals were, other than Clue, were incredible. I mean, the light cycle sequence, guess you call them light jet sequence. I mean, even the little scene in the club, though I will say that I believe his name is Michael Sheehan? Is the actor. He was in
Michael Sheen,
Michael Sheen, he was in Frost Nixon.
Oh.
You're hating on Frost Nixon?
No, I'm hating on his character.
Okay, I was going to say, because that's not actually a good movie.
It's great. He was very good at that.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, no, he's a great actor. He's a fantastic actor. But I feel like they almost said, okay, what is your favorite condiment? And he said, Parmesan cheese. And they said, okay, see this digital scenery? I'm going to cover it in Parmesan cheese, and then I want you to chew it as just vigorously as you possibly can. Chew the scenery, please.
Oh, it was horrid.
Because it was so over the top. And it was, again, I don't mind kind of having this kind of quirky, flamboyant character who, you know, what's his alliance, blah, blah, blah. That's cool. I think what I don't like, though, is when it's so, like, just over, it was just...
Well, and it didn't seem to fit in with the rest.
It did. It was completely out of left
field. Yeah,
it did. It really did. And so I do agree, though. Like I said, the visuals incredible. If you're a sci-fi fan, if you're a Tron, original Tron fan, you just feel nostalgic. If you just like to kind of see in a movie this kind of cool little nod to some 80s stuff. I mean, there's just some moments that I don't want to give away that are like straight up, you know, from the original movies, just little tiny things. And it was cool. I liked that. I actually liked Jeff Bridges as the dude. Meets Obi-Wan Kenobi because that's who he was. And I thought that was kind of cool. I actually would have much rather had him just be him through the whole movie. You know, because whenever he was on screen, it was very cool. Like I said, he has that kind of Zen master thing going on. And then I will add this one last piece, which is it me or does the plot of Tron Legacy do to science what Phantom Menace did to the mystical, you know, mysticism and religion of Star Wars? And what I mean by that is, in Phantom Menace, the whole thing where, okay, all this time, what have we thought? We thought the Force. It's, you know, this spiritual thing. It's this thing. It's this magical thing. Oh, no, sorry. It's a metachlorian count. So if your metachlorian count isn't very high...
Don't get started on your Star Wars rant now.
We're going to have one of those, buddy.
Save that for another podcast.
We're going to have one of those. Send your hate mail to feedback at ForgottenPlanets.com.
That's right.
If you're a prequel fan. But that being said, the Metachlorian crap, in my opinion, kind of just, you know, destroyed that whole element of what made Star Wars just awesome with the Force being this mystical thing. Whereas with this film, and I don't want to give it away because it's kind of a big plot piece, it has this moment where you look at the original Tron, and the original Tron was... And this will be my sort of short and sweet, because again, the original Tron for me, I always thought as a kid it visually looked cool. I didn't get it. Yeah. I liked playing video games. You know, I did like to read. I loved watching movies, but I was not a like true like uber computer, you know, techie geek kind of kid. And I did not get that movie. I watching it now, having, you know, been involved with computer programming and some other things, I mean, I'm watching it. I get it, like, on a technical level, but I'm thinking, oh, man, they were... I mean, in a way, it was very, you know, brave to make that movie just because it's so... the language is so arcane and so tech-heavy, you know?
And, oh, yeah, definitely.
And I think that's probably the biggest difference between the two films. The original Tron had great ideas that the limitations in the technology couldn't realize. Because at the time, you know, from, you know, David Warner's character, you know, when he's at INCOM, using the touch screen interface, and it, you know, it has that kind of iPad.
talking to the MCP, back.
Yeah, but I mean, there's these cool, at the time, were just revolutionary ideas, and a lot of it have since, you know, somewhat, in some level, come to fruition. Whereas with the new one, the visuals are off the charts brilliant, but it's... The ideas are pretty much...
And you know what? They haven't grown much. And I don't know if that was on purpose, that they were maybe trying to keep it just like the original, but there's so many places they could have gone with that I thought that it would have been better. But yeah, I'll leave it at that, that I would say too, that I recommend, especially for sci-fi fans, you got to see it. It's really cool. Looks good. See it in 3D if you can.
Oh, absolutely. 3D IMAX, I think it's much like Avatar, you know, AKA Dance of the Wolves meets Pocahontas in space. Avatar is a visually brilliant movie and I haven't watched it yet, you know, at home yet, because I don't really want to. I feel like story-wise, I wasn't as that engaged. It was about the visual experience, and there's something to be said for that. The problem is the long term. How are these films going to hold up over the long haul? Even if we have 3D TVs in our home, I mean, I think that would help, because it would help, you know, you experience it more fully. But I just think
it's not the same as the immersion
Yeah, no, absolutely. You really, I think for this film, I think if you're watching a 2D, I'd give it maybe 4 stars, maybe or 4, I'd count 1 to 10, I'd give it a 4, maybe. I think if you're seeing it 3D, IMAX, the visuals, the score, I freaking love Daft Punk score, as I told you after the movie was over. I said, that's the one thing I said I'm going to say. I loved the score. And I guess if you're not into that kind of music, you might not like it, but it fit. It felt cool. It felt like Tangerine Dream, retro. It worked.
The entire movie felt like a very cool kind of punk techno experience. I mean, the whole thing, it fit well with the visuals.
Yeah.
I
really liked that a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Too bad the story was poop. Yeah. So, but you know, live and learn.
So moving on to the old movie.
Okay. Well, I think we've kind of touched upon the old movie. I'll let you, cause we're actually, believe it or not, already 30 minutes into this bad boy. And, and so what we'll do is if you want to, we can so much for my, well, we'll only touch lightly on Tron Legacy.
Yeah, right.
And we'll spend more time on the old one.
Like I said, it was emotional constipation. We both had a lot to say coming out of the theater, and we kind of
Held it in. It's like, yes. The X-Lax.
Let it all out into the forgotten X-Lax, toilet.
The verbal X-Lax worked. All right. So go ahead and if you want to elaborate on Tron.
Yeah, I'll just say that as a nostalgia piece, watching it again, it still brought back great memories, especially memories of playing the stand-up Tron video game, you know, which had the very typical 4 games, the light cycles, the little spiders, and the, you know, the tanks. And that was the last one. There was 4. Oh, I can't remember them, but the maze, the tank maze was one of them. But the game was great, and the movie connecting to it. At the time, there weren't a lot of movies, none that I could think of off the top of my head, that connected directly to a video game at the time.
Well, I would say there had been none. I mean, video games were, ultimately very new at that point.
Right, and nothing you got at home. I mean, you're talking Atari, ColecoVision, none of that stuff was movie worthy, so to speak. And they did try and recreate some movies in the games, but that's...
Wasn't there the one movie that came out it was like 79, 80, Pong? There was like Attack of the Pong? Something? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, not quite the same watching a square flying across the screen. But so for the, you know, for a kid, this was pretty awesome to think that, you know, there was a live person that could be connected to a game. And so it made that kind of cool. I made reference to before, kind of like The Last Starfighter. It was kind of neat having that connection to it. But, you know, watching it again, it was like the movie is very, very drab. It's got a lot of grays and a lot of things in it. But at the time watching it and putting it in context, which I think is incredibly important, especially for a lot of the, you know, the movies in the 70s and 80s, contextually, it was very brave, I think, because, you know, talk about things like RAM and the one character's name is RAM and user and some of the computer languages. And your main character is a hacker. And for, you know, 1982, what was a hacker? Nobody knew that. So I think it was really kind of neat. And of course they did get nominated for costume, and the sound was really cool. So as a nostalgia piece, I definitely loved it. Nice watching it again, good memories, but you know, again, wasn't, I think a top tier movie, but I would still rate it slightly. I would still rate it higher if in it of itself, then I would Tron Legacy.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna rate based on like visual effects, you're comparing apples to oranges. You can't.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not even fair to make
that
comparison.
Yeah, you can't do it exactly.
But I think if we're gonna compare based on the context, like when did this movie come out? Where, you know, the fact that I think one of the things that, well, I'll just say that struck me for starters, I didn't have a nostalgic connection because, like I said, I remember seeing it once when I was maybe, you know, 8 or 9 years old, and I didn't get it. I thought it was boring, and you know, watching it now as an adult, understanding a lot more of it. I mean, I definitely saw some serious holes, not the least of which is why the female character played by Cindy Morgan, I think was Yuri. Is that the name of the? And this is a big spoiler. So if you don't want to hear this, fast forward about 20 seconds, maybe longer, because I tend to rant. And obviously it's going to be longer than 20 seconds, because I'm still talking. But maybe 30 seconds if you don't want to hear this. But at the end of the movie, when she like goes to him and they get this long, you know, kiss, and it's like I felt like where the hell did that come from? I was like, I was like emotionally. I mean, I understand she's a program, and you know, okay,
yeah, right.
But I just felt, which of course one would argue, emotional programs, okay, unless she was programmed that way. It just struck me as far as the characters were concerned, emotionally, huh? Like it just it didn't ring.
There was a lot of suspension of disbelief in this. Of course, you had to believe that this was a fantasy world,
not that this was an actual
representation of a digital world. Which, you know, that there was a lot of holes with that.
But, yeah, and I think that that's the key. Probably 99.8% of the movies we discuss on this podcast will require that. I mean, it's going to be this constant like sense of hypocrisy, where on one hand we're like, it just didn't make any sense. It was emotionally false.
Was it real?
You know, the part where the guy was taken by a laser into the computer, that was perfectly fine. But emotionally, oh no, buddy. That rang false. So anyway, Tron, I actually really liked it. And I think it was because of there was a sincerity behind it. You could tell that the filmmaker, I believe is Steve Lisberger, I'm not sure 100% how to pronounce his name. The guy who wrote and directed it, and Bonnie McBird, I believe, helped him write the screenplay, and they really knew their stuff. I almost imagine them just being these, you know, very techie, you know, geeky who, you know, in the early 80s, and here they have this opportunity. They're complete outsiders getting into Disney's animation department. And I actually I heard an interview on, I think it was twit.tv, which is the Leo Laporte, if you're familiar with him, the tech guy. It was one of his podcasts, but they did this interview with the filmmakers behind Tron. And when they interviewed him, he talked about, you know, being this outsider and that they were never really accepted. And I thought that was kind of it was just interesting to hear all that. And it was funny, the picture of him, he actually kind of himself looks like the dude. he has that kind of cool, geeky, you know, hippie thing going on, which that was the other thing I really liked. I like that, you know, going back to Tron Legacy, Jeff Bridges in that film, Flynn, I liked that he was kind of this hippie tech guy. It's kind of like Steve Jobs. You know what I mean? He's like, minus the turtleneck and, you know, all the power. He had that vibe though. He had that sort of like, you know, here's the guy who really believed he would change the world with his ideas and in some sense could have. And it was just, I just like that. And I like that character. So,
I think they did a cool job of making him look like he was the kind of slacker lounge lizard, but not the geek. But you know, he owned his own video arcade and he had his bachelor pad above the arcade stuff. So
And that was what I liked in Tron. I liked the fact that, you know, Flynn was this kind of rogue rebel character. Mm-hmm. You know, I liked that. I liked that aspect to him. And you know, again, there was a lot of problems with the film, of course, but overall, I thought it worked really well. I mean, for me, I think, especially the visual of it. Yes, it was very blocky and dated, and I wouldn't even begin to compare it to the emotional impact that the new film had on a visual level.
Right.
But that being said, I felt there was something just charming and interesting about it. It's sort of the idea, and I can't remember the name of them off the top of my head, but you've looked at those, they're like from the late 19th, early 20th century. They're little viewfinders. They're made of wood, and I don't know why it's escaping me. You had the little plates, like the viewfinder. You know what I'm talking about? And you'd stick it on the end, it's like not a lithograph. It's like a, I wish I could remember what they're called. It's going to drive me nuts.
And stereograph?
Because you're looking through both. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
But I remember my grandmother had some of those. And I remember looking at them, and they had, a lot of them were hand, you know, painted
colored
different pastels, but the black and white would show through. That's what the original Tron reminded me of. It had that quality. And so in the same way you might look at one of those and appreciate it for the artistry that went into it at the time, that's kind of what I felt like with Tron. So for me personally, I'd say I would check out the new Tron because of just the visuals. Make sure you see it at the theater. But
it's a fun ride. It's worth the queue.
And I think the new one I think would be even more interesting to watch because I had watched it after I heard the interview with the director and a lot of the people who were involved with the original film. So I think maybe watching extras about it and seeing what they had to go through, it would give you a whole new appreciation. I think if you go into a cold, if you know, you show it to your kid, the kids, you know, roll their eyes and be like, okay, whatever, dad or mom is. Yeah. Okay. But I think that being said, if you go into it, you know, with that knowledge, understanding the context, you can really enjoy the film. So anyway, that's just sort of our take on it. And I just want to throw out there real quick, since we're at least at the halfway point here in the show, that you can reach us at feedback@forgottenflicks.com. And I just realized, Jason, that I don't have the number. So I'm going to go ahead and give the number at the end of the podcast. And I'm probably going to have to actually edit that in because I don't have it on me at the moment.
That works.
Oopsie.
That works.
Okay. So so we'll go ahead and actually at this point, this would be a great part to pause in the podcast as far as us talking. And I'm going to go ahead and play some feedback that we have received. The first one is from DeFixer at DeFixer.com. He is a podcaster. He is the first one to leave us feedback via our voicemail line, the phone number of which I will give you at the end of the show. And I really appreciate him doing that. It was kind of cool. You know, we hadn't gotten anything. Mm-hmm. And I just finished the first episode, which was, 11 minutes of me prattling on about, what the show is going to be like. And I'm sure we've probably completely already blown that structure out of the water. But it was just very cool for him, I think, to call in and give me, his feedback and let me know that he was, liking kind of where we were headed and the ideas that, what we were going to talk about. So anyway, I'll go and play that for you. And then there's going to be a couple more after that. And remember, like I said, shoot your feedback through the email and I'll give the voicemail at the end. And we want to hear from you guys. We want to play your voicemails and read your emails on the show. So here we go.
Hey, Joel, this is Umar, otherwise known as The Fixer. I just listened to your first show. I think you have a great idea for a show. I love the obscure movies that few people talk about. The ones that I never hear about on other movie podcasts. Every once in a while, maybe they might throw it into the mix. I'm talking like movies like Adventures in Babysitting, Saturday the 13th, Clue, which you hear about sometimes, but you don't hear enough about. So I like going back to those old 1970s, Earth vs. the Spider, Night of the Lepus, which I believe had DeForest Kelly in it, of all people. But I'm a total subscriber to your show. I love it so far. I like where it's going. Can't wait to hear more. And consider me a subscriber. Good luck, man.
Hey, man, that podcast sounds great, man. I can't wait to listen to you talk about some of those 80s movies. I was born right before that, and I listen to all the podcasts that have to do with the 80s, but I think yours is going to be the best. You know what, though? I was thinking, you're kind of missing something. Maybe you need somebody to be like a co-host. Maybe somebody who's like really smart and, kind of good-looking and sounds really good on the radio. I bet you could get somebody like that. Yeah, if you had someone like that, then I'd really listen. So, that's all I had to say. So, great podcast, and I'll talk to you soon.
And we're back. And like I said, thanks to everybody for sending that feedback in. I'll give you a hint. The second voicemail may have been somebody with a little bias.
Hey, what can I say? I was a little bored. I wanted to call in to the...
And you were channeling your inner Garth. I got it.
I was.
And luckily, it turns out Jason, unlike yours truly, actually came prepared. Of course, he used to be an Eagle Scout, so that makes sense. Came prepared to the podcast with the voicemail number. So he is now going to give it to you.
Absolutely. Forgotten Flicks feedback line is area code 206-203-0491. It's not an 888 number, so all long-distance rates apply. And hopefully if you have a cell phone, you get free unlimited long distance. But if not, it's definitely worth the money you pay to leave us your feedback. I guarantee it.
Yeah, because you'll be on the air, brother. I mean, you'll be – yeah, or sister. It's all good. You'll be on the air.
Take it all.
Okay. So now we're going to do a segment that we are tentatively going to call Forgotten Flicks Recommends. I think we should put recommends in quotes because most of the movies we're going to talk about, I don't want you showing up at my house to, do something bad to me because of you seeing some of these movies and saying, really, this is what you recommended? You recommended me wasting hours of my life on this? So understand that these are just movies that thematically fit with what we're talking about. And we're, for all intents and purposes, we're just trying to be kind of cutesy clever and coming up with some relatively obscure titles or movies that, haven't been seen in a long time, hence the name of this podcast. So we wanted to go ahead and, you know, throw them out there. We're going to do 6 titles. I'm going to do 3. Jason's going to do 3. And the fun part about this is neither of us knows what the other one is going to do. So there's very possibly going to be overlap. And there's also going to possibly
be... Yeah, I don't think so, but okay, maybe.
Okay, and there's also possibly going to be name calling. So let...
Yes,
let,
definitely might be some of that.
Okay, so let that be known. And because I am the courteous host, I'm going to extend... Yet again, the baton of going first to Jason. I don't know if that actually makes me courteous or just a jerk. Because
it's
then
not courtesy, it's set up.
Yeah, it's totally set up, yeah, actually. So I'm going to go ahead and hand the baton over to Jason and let him start with his, we'll call it, the 6 total. So we'll go ahead and do his number 3 pick, the one that's going to probably be the least controversial of the 3. And the theme, I probably should add this in, the theme of this segment of Forgotten Flicks picks or recommends is going to be movies where the main character, it doesn't matter how, it doesn't matter whether it's the whole movie, in some way, shape, or form, ends up in a computer or animated world, some kind of fantasy world. You know, it's got to be digital, virtual reality. So hopefully Jason adhered to that.
No, I didn't adhere to that.
Oopsie. Oopsie.
Alternate universe.
I think I actually said digital, though. It had to have some sort of computer angle to it, but that's okay. We'll hear his picks anyway. And that being said, they have to be none of those movies can be The Matrix or any of the 2 sequels whose names shall not be spoken because they're so atrocious. So we will go ahead and so there's no Matrix involved in this, and we will go ahead and begin with Jason. Go ahead and give me your first pick.
All right. Well, I didn't go with the digital theme because to me, like I'd mentioned before, it wasn't so much about the video game or the fact that it was inside the computer as much as it was, you know, kind of being trapped inside of a fantasy world or, you know, kind of an alternate reality. So my first one I picked, Flash Gordon. Absolutely loved it as a kid. It was similar in that it was this, you know, kind of having to travel to a completely different universe and be an outsider hero and, you know, I loved the movie. The music by Queen, obviously fantastic as well. But so that was kind of an easy one for me. And to me, it was sort of video game-ish because it was that over the top type of thing. Okay. But that was the first.
Okay.
That was my one easy one.
That's a good pick. And I think we'll have some people out there who will agree with that one. I know I've had several great folks that have commented and actually done guest posts on the Forgotten Flicks website that have mentioned Flash Gordon and really liking it. John Champion of DVD mm-hmm. Geeks has mentioned it as being a favorite of his. I believe Dayton Ward, who's a great writer and blogger, is actually going to be doing a couple of Christmas-related guest posts here very soon. I believe that he also is a Flash Gordon fan. I hope I'm right on that. Dayton, sorry if I'm not. And you could always call in, Dayton. Yeah, call into the feedback line and tell me what an idiot I am that I don't apparently remember anything. That'd be fine, too. So... I have to make a confession about Flash Gordon. I have seen most of it.
You haven't seen it all?
I haven't seen it all because it's another one, much like Tron. When I was a kid, I apparently was I only watched Bergman films as a child. It was Bergman and Godard and a little Buñuel. That was pretty much my primary cinematic culinary choices when I was a child. So films like Flash Gordon apparently were completely lost to me. Now, in all seriousness, I just, for whatever reason, it's one of those that I'd watch on TV, I'd get into it a little bit, and then something would distract me. Another movie that was always like that for me was Spies Like Us. I've seen the whole movie, but never from beginning to
never
end.
Never all one time.
It's always, and I've heard of several people having that experience with that movie. You see it at the beginning, halfway through, something happens, you can't finish it. Next time you pick it up, it's already at the halfway point, and then you finish it to the end. I have done that like 3 times with that movie. Flash Gordon, I've never done it as many times, but it's the same kind of experience. Although, I do appreciate the music. I do appreciate a good campy sci-fi early 80s flick.
Yeah.
So I know it's already on the queue. I'm going to watch it. So anyway.
And just to throw in a little bit of connection to that movie, my favorite, one of the characters in the movie who plays the emperor, who is Max von Sydow. Favorite movie of his for me was Strange Brew, Bob and Doug McKenzie. He played the bad guy in that one as well. So
that's a good pick there, eh? All right, so now it's going to be my turn, eh?
For a good Canadian
movie. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do my pick now. And I just probably offended every single person from Canada who's listening. I apologize. Okay.
Yeah.
So Yeah, we have to remember, dude, people are listening to this beyond us. Okay.
Nobody's listening to this. No,
actually, you're right.
It's good.
Boy, that
offend
was...
Offend anybody.
That, you're right, okay. So, my number three pick will be, and this is actually, it's tough for me to decide which one is going to be the least groan-worthy. So, I'm going to go ahead and go with my third pick being Lawnmower Man from 1992.
Oh, wow.
Directed by the great Brett Leonard, who also gave us Dean Koontz's Hideaway and Virtuosity, starring Denzel Washington and Russell Crowe.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. I will be honest, I remember really liking this movie.
The Lawnmower Man?
Yes. To be fair, I'm the idiot who does the really bad Canadian accent, and I was like, 15 or 16 when the movie came out. So, you know, all things being equal. I also remember watching it at the drive-in. I think it may have even, I'm not sure if it opened with Sleepwalkers or not, but it may have been like a double feature with Sleepwalkers. And again, another one, I don't know why, but I freaking love that movie. I know it's not a great movie, believe me, but there's I got a thing for Mick Garris's movies, and I don't know. We'll have to do a podcast about that, and it'll act as a therapy session for me. So, but the cool thing about Lawnmower Man to me is that it stars Jeff Frank Lapidus, for all you Lost fans, Faye, as Job, the mentally challenged gardener who is taken by Pierce Brosnan's, you know, crazy scientist character, and Pierce Brosnan's character gives him medicines and gives him, you know, I guess it's supposed to enhance his intelligence and puts him through these virtual reality. This was back in the, you know, the early 90s when the whole idea of virtual reality and, you know, was coming into play as being this big deal. And, you know, as a result, Job gets smarter and smarter. And unfortunately, he also, in like so many of these films, you know, turns on his creator. So it's got this sort of Frankenstein theme going through it. It also, I mentioned this to Jason earlier. I just sort of blurted out before we started recording the podcast. Who wrote Flowers for Algernon? It just hit me in the head. And I remembered it was Daniel Keyes. And the reason why is because that's basically what the story is in a sense, because if you remember the story of Flowers for Algernon, it was made into the movie Charlie with Cliff Robertson, the whole idea being that this, you know, mentally challenged guy is given an opportunity, you know, they do some sort of drug or some sort of testing on him that causes him to get smarter, and it has tragic effects. Now, believe me, I am not comparing Lawnmower Man to Charlie, not even close, but... I am saying there's some interesting ideas and themes buried somewhere in there. It's also interesting to note that I believe Stephen King sued to have his name taken off of it because it's based on one of his short stories that it has zero to do with that short story if you've ever read it. So anyway, that is my number three
pick. Number three?
Yes. So go ahead and give me your number two. and right. I'm sure it will be a number two. Go ahead.
Yes, it is definitely a number two. My number two is Prisoners of the Lost Universe, 1983.
Okay, Rocky.
I knew I would stump you on this one. Now, it stars Richard Hatch. If you don't remember the name, he actually was in the original Battlestar Galactica, and John Saxon. Now,
wow,
John Saxon. Those of you horror fans,
Nightmare on Elm Street, Black
Absolute.
Christmas. Yeah, he's done a lot of great stuff. Yep.
So this is one where these people are transported into kind of a parallel universe. It's kind of this really kitschy, weird combination of modern technology, but they have to use medieval-style weapons. And
that's cool.
Very kind of kitschy, old school. But I like the connection to John Saxon and Richard Hatch, and it was kind of my little guilty pleasure, so to speak. So
okay, well, I honestly think it's probably less of a guilty pleasure than my number two pick, which again is another movie that I admit when it came out, I liked it. I saw it opening weekend in the movie theater. Tough poopy. All right. And we're trying to keep this as a relatively clean podcast, since why I keep using poopy, although I'm sure over time that's going to change. Okay. So number two on my list is Brain Scan from 1994. And it starred a young Edward Furlong, as many of you might know him. He would play John Connor. And are you there? Hello?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. I heard you now. I heard a click and then I heard nothing. So I was like, wow. So Brain Scan's what did it.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me now? Okay.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Folks, we're using Skype. We apologize.
Okay. Yeah.
So Brain
Scan. Edit that out.
Yeah. So Brain Scan from 1994. Edward Furlong, he was John Connor in T2, which came out a few years prior to this. I saw T2 at the movie theater, I believe, 11 times. I think that's how many times I saw T2. Brain Scan, I only saw a couple times, which is probably two times too many. But it was the whole concept was there was this character called the Trickster. The Edward Furlong character is this outcast, horror fan, and he... Mm-hmm. He's, really looking to, play this cool game, interactive game where you get to go around killing innocent people. Well, unfortunately, people really start dying in the real world based on what he did in the game. And it just escalates from there to where he begins to believe he's actually killing them. And it's kind of it's kind of cheeseball. However, interesting trivia points about it. It was directed by John Flynn, who also did Rolling Thunder, which was a William Devane revenge picture that came out in the late 70s. And that movie is actually the movie that Quentin Tarantino named his short-lived. He did a distribution label, I guess, for lack of a kind of a boutique kind of a label that he released several low budget, cult films, I guess I should say, cult films on, and it was called Rolling Thunder. And he also did Lock Up with Stallone and Donald Sutherland, which came out in the 80s. And he also did Out for Justice, that was a Steven Seagal picture that came out in the early 90s. So, oh, and another quick little trivia piece was Frank Langella, who was also in Frost Nixon. Making the connections. he also played Skeletor in Masters of the Universe, which Jason and I were talking about prior to this podcast. And yes, that's what we do. We talk about Masters of the Universe. Wow. So anyway, Frank Langella, who's actually a really, really great actor, was in it. I believe he played a detective that, is going to find the answers. And
yes.
It was written by Andrew Kevin Walker, who went on to write the screenplay for Seven and Sleepy Hollow, the Tim Burton film from the late 90s. And he also did The Wolfman, which...
Ugh.
Right. So, anyway, that's just an interesting, few little trivia bits from Brain Scan 1984, which I felt it needed because, honestly, the movie itself is, I don't know if it's really worthy of, mass amounts of discussion
on it.
Yeah, but you owe it to yourself. It's one of those movies that I think was really striving. There was that early to mid 90s range when after, most of the Nightmare films and Friday the 13th and Halloween's had run their course for the most part. And the slasher genre was, getting ready to really be sort of, tongue in cheek mocked in the Scream films. This was one of those movies that came out where I think they created this trickster character because he was going to be the next Freddy. He was going to be the next Jason. And they did, there was like that. There was Leprechaun. There were several movies that they tried. And of course, Leprechaun actually did become a franchise. There were several films that came out where there was an intention. Like, whereas Nightmare was just a great horror film that Craven wrote and directed, they made this movie because they wanted it to be a franchise. So, anyway, that's my number two. Jason, give us your ringer, your number one pick.
All right. I had to pick a really cornball one because I was struggling with this one because I tried to think, what are other movies, that had this similar theme? And I don't have the depth of the... of knowledge as you do, but I looked up a couple from my past and some movies that I'd seen, and again, going with this kind of alternate world theme, I went ahead and pulled out a ringer. It was Journey to the Center of the Earth, and I'm not talking about the recent remake with Brendan Fraser. I am talking about, yes, that golden oldie from 1989 featuring Emo Phillips. Now, the ringer in this is that the co-star was the beautiful Kathy Ireland, because she has quite the stellar movie career as well.
Hey,
so
Necessary Roughness was a fantastic football movie, buddy. It had Scott Bakula in it. For all you Quantum Leap fans out there.
Yes, definitely. but it was a movie about this family that goes exploring in Hawaii and falls down through this volcano into the center of the earth, this new world. And I've seen it described as kind of a, the H.R. Puffin stuff meets the Saturday Afternoon Special. It's, the best movie, but it's again, one of those kitschy movies. And, I just got to say it, and I don't care who hears me. There's a distinct lack of movies featuring Emo Phillips in this world.
And Kathy Ireland for that matter.
So
my number one, my ringer is, it's something, it's Arcade from 1993. That is a, I believe it was a Full Moon, or it was connected some way, because Charles Band of Full Moon fame actually wrote it. He actually wrote it, interestingly enough, with David S. Goyer, which a lot of people might know wrote the original Blade. He wrote Batman Begins. I think he just did the story on The Dark Knight. He has directed a few things, which at the moment are completely escaping me. But, you know, he's written quite a few things. He also wrote Dark City, which is a very, very cool Alex Proyas film that's this just kind of bizarre, noir, mystery, dark fantasy kind of movie that I highly recommend. And he also wrote Puppet Master. Come on, people.
Oh,
he wrote
yes.
Puppet Master. And I believe he also wrote Dollman versus Demonic Toys. And Dollman is awesome for one reason only. Tim Thomerson plays Dollman.
Yes.
Tim Thomerson. Remember the name, know the name. Okay. So that is, oh, it also, and I wanted to make sure I mentioned this, this is very, very important. It starred Peter Billingsley. And Peter Billingsley, for all you crazy kids out there, is Ralphie from A Christmas Story.
That's right. Yes.
And this was, I think, may have been one of the last movies he ever starred in prior to becoming, because he became this big kind of producer, director guy. That's what he does now, and hang out with Vince Vaughn. I think that's pretty much the big things he does. So
and lives off his royalty checks from Christmas Story.
Yeah.
So.
And I believe also, was it the BMX Kid? What was that bike? He was like in one of those like bike movies that came out like the early 80s. I don't know. Does that ring a bell?
But BMX?
Yeah, I know BMX rings a bell, but
was it the one where they were doing the prom dance?
No, that's Rad. Oh, no.
That's Rad.
That's Rad,
yeah.
With Lori Loughlin.
That's the only BMX movie I've ever.
That's going to be a podcast in and of itself, buddy.
The Rad. Because there is no prom dance like a BMX prom dance.
The Rad Thrashing Gleaming the Cube cast. That is going to be an awesome. That's going to be awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
We don't want to go. But it also had Megan Ward in it, who, if you ever saw Freaked, which was a cool movie, Transfers 2 and 3, again, awesome. Why, kids? Tim Thomerson. Right there, I need to add like an echo effect. Tim Thomerson. She was in Encino Man. She was in PCU. She was in Joe's Apartment.
Yeah, yeah.
And Seth Green was in Arcade. Seth Green.
Really?
Yes, Seth, the man Green. Yes. And AJ Langer, who I always thought was uber cute and was Alice in People Under the Stairs, a highly underrated Wes Craven film that is one of my personal favorites. So
love that movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I love that movie. So cool. All right. So anyway, that is those are our picks. So let's see. We had your number three was, say it again.
Flash Gordon.
Okay. My number, we'll do them in order. So that was six. That would be six. My number five was Lawnmower Man. Number four, that would be you.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
You got to remember the name of the movie that you picked.
I told you it was my guilty pleasure. Prisoners of the Lost Universe.
Yeah, that's right. Prisoners of the Lost Universe. Okay. And then, and my number three was, in fact, Brain Scan. Number two,
Was Journey to the Center of the Earth.
The TV, the TV version from 1989. And I will add that, notice, folks, I didn't get critical at all about the fact that that did not remotely connect to Tron at all in the sense of being a part of a computer world. That's cool, though. It's cool.
Hey, I told you I was struggling, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you really were. And then my number one was Arcade from 1993. So anyway, those are our quote-unquote recommendations. And I just hit the microphone. That was slick. So those are our recommendations. You know, take them for what they're worth. And with that, we've been going for pretty close to an hour now. And I'm just going to wrap it up. Like I said before, go ahead and leave us your feedback at feedback@forgottenflix.com. That's feedback@forgottenflix.com. And the voicemail number again, Jason.
All right. Voicemail number four, the Forgotten Flicks feedback line. Again, this is not an 888 number. Area code is 206-203-0491.
Okay. And with that, we're going to go. I'll give a little quick sneak peek. I've only kind of briefly mentioned this to Jason. The next episode we do will more than likely be in 2 weeks. So the next episode is going to be a Bruce Campbell-centric episode. I will give you that hint. There will be some Bruce Campbell action going on in that episode. So you'll want to tune in. be sure to leave feedback. Maybe call in, tell us some of your favorite Bruce Campbell movies, memories. If you want to call in about the Tron films, that would be cool too. So go ahead, or maybe even any of our wonderful, wonderful recommendations. So go ahead and call, leave your feedback, and let us know what you think. All right, take care, and we are out. And Jason, do you have anything you want to finish up with?
No, I'm pretty good, except I think I'm going to go try and find myself a stand-up Tron video game and try and relive some of that early movie scenes.
That will be awesome, especially if you're wearing your Daisy Duke shorts.
Absolutely.
and your polyester halter top. That will be fantastic.
Yeah, but I have to get myself a bike helmet with a little bit of the UV tape on it so it reflects off of it.
Oh, yes, like, that will be uber like cool, dude. Uber cool. Okay, so until next time, remember, a flick is only forgotten if you're not talking about it.